Hello and welcome to the Travel Diaries podcast. I'm Holly Rubinstein. I'm a travel and entertainment journalist, and here each week I'll be speaking to a very special guest about their adventures around the world and the travel experiences and destinations that have shaped their lives. Today, I'm joined by a man who built a social media empire from traveling the world, Jeremy Jauncey. Jeremy is the man behind the world's largest online travel community, Beautiful Destinations, which has a combined following of over 25 million people. The jaw-droppingly gorgeous photos on Beautiful Destinations have provided me with endless travel inspiration over the years and undoubtedly influenced some of my travel choices. And what was once a passion project has become a global business with Beautiful Destinations offices based out of the US, UK and Asia. While it might look like Jeremy spends most of his time being photographed in some of the most epic locations around the world, meditating on North Island in the Seychelles, hugging giant pandas in China, posing on a horse rearing in front of a pyramid in Egypt, as you do, most of the time he is actually consulting with major travel brands and tourist boards, helping them to tell inspiring stories through social-first content. And it's an interesting topic because last year I actually wrote an article about the power of social media and travel. And it was based on a study that found that 34% of millennials had booked a holiday because of content they'd seen on social media. So this is a medium of marketing and journalism that is only going to grow exponentially, I think. And this conversation gives a deep insight into the business of travel and travel marketing, the power of imagery and the power of human connection. Jeremy spoke to me from his warehouse apartment in the heart of Manhattan, and at times he's accompanied by the soundtrack of New York City in the background. From New Zealand and Japan to the Philippines and Norwegian Fjordland, here are the travel diaries of Jeremy Jauncey. Jeremy Jauncey, welcome to the Travel Diaries. Thank you so much for joining me today, all the way from New York City. How are you?
I'm very well. It's my pleasure, Holly. Thank you for having me.
And we're speaking just as COVID lockdown is kind of gradually easing. As someone who travels consistently, has it been quite a shock to the system to be grounded for this length of time?
It has. And I think really it's sort of put into context many things for me. One, just unfortunately how challenged the travel industry is. We're all in this industry. We love it very, very much. It is the economic heartbeat of so many different countries, and it provides employment to so many people that there's obviously a personal sadness about not being able to travel, but really more of a point of context of realizing quite how impactful it has been for the global economy, and certainly with my business with Beautiful Destinations and our clients, it has had a meaningful impact.
It's so tough. How are you feeling about the recovery?
Yes, so I think we should look at two different pillars. Cautious and hopeful optimism is the first part of how I'm feeling. I think the second part is obviously from the business and from the trade side is just reiterating that there is a difference between the supply side and the demand side. And certainly on the supply side, the people in the tourism trade, most people have done a fantastic job to prepare themselves to allow travelers. So hotels have the right cleaning protocols. Airlines are doing the same things. Tourism boards are implementing checks at their borders, which is all fantastic on the supply side. But I think the reality is on the demand side and the feeling that consumers have right now, travel is still challenged, and we still have a ways to go.
And Beautiful Destinations, of course, is all about inspiring people to travel. And many people, even despite the challenges that you mentioned there, a lot of people's wanderlust has really been amplified during this time, I think, simply because they are unable to travel and they're busy dreaming up their future travel plans. Have you found that?
Very much so. And I think there's a lot of data supporting that. There was a fascinating article a few weeks back in the New York Times that showed meaningful spikes in usage of social media and the streaming platforms. And of course, it makes sense because people are at home and they can't travel, certainly on our accounts. And, you know, we're very fortunate that our audience is a global audience of 25 million people across all the platforms that we're on. They are engaging more in the content I think to your exact point, they can't travel. There's always been a strong driver to look at the world and discover the world. And because our philosophy is so rooted in the idea that travel is a force for good, and that through the lens of travel, you can inspire people to understand culture and get deeper with people and really get into a place where you embrace differences amongst, you know, races and cultures and nations all over the world. I don't think that that went away in Corona.
No.
And I think that that certainly continues to be a reason why people will come and look at some of the inspirational content that we create.
And similarly with this chat today, I'm sure your travel diaries will provide that same sense of inspiration.
Yeah, I hope so.
For when we're all able to travel freely again. So let's get started there with chapter one.
Okay.
And that is your earliest childhood travel memory.
Yes. So I grew up in Scotland on a farm in the middle of nowhere. We had a small, tight-knit family. I think if anybody follows me on social media, they know that I'm very, very close to my brother. And we spent so much time together, really without the kind of the trappings or the stimulations that you'd get in a major city. We lived on a farm that was really the middle of nowhere. And so my earliest childhood memories would be of being back home in Scotland and domestic travel around Scotland, really. We would go with our family, and we would drive around Scotland. And I fell in love, really, with the idea of being outdoors and being active. And I find a lot of calmness and solitude when I go back to Scotland, and obviously because it's rooted in my childhood, the earliest things I remember are going out with my brother and running about in nature and being very much outdoors. And you know, when I think back to that stuff, although it's not directly related to travel, the first job that I ever did was actually wild oat roguing, which is walking through potato fields and pulling wild oats out of the potato fields so that the potatoes grow. So it, I mean, number one, it was a brutal job. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It was a very, very, a very tough job. But I think I have those feelings when I think about my earliest travel memories, being around Scotland and being out in nature and being on a farm.
I think a lot of British travellers are focusing on Scotland as a place that could be the first place that they mm-hmm. have a summer holiday this year, because mm-hmm. it's such beauty on our doorstep. And yet I've read that I think potentially more people in the UK have been to New Zealand than they have been to the Scottish Highlands, for example.
Oh, that's mad. Well, I mean, I'm certainly one of those. I moved to New Zealand when I was 18.
Oh, really?
So when I was younger, my background and my plan was really to be in elite sport. So I'd played rugby for Scotland whilst I was at school, and the plan that I was going through, or planning to go through, was to try and become a professional rugby player. So I actually moved to New Zealand for 2 years, did a season playing in Christchurch, did a season playing in Wellington, and I know we're going to come to some other questions about wider travel memories, but that was the first time that I really got out and saw the world, and it was through rugby, and then actually moving from Scotland to New Zealand, which actually have many, many parallels when you see both the countries,
the landscape,
and the people, just friendly, you know, down to earth, kind of honest people. And I really felt like when I had left Scotland, I went to Christchurch first, and Christchurch was very similar to where I grew up in Perth, which is a few hours out of Edinburgh, and the farming community, you know, lots of rugby, lots of sport. So yeah, it was almost a home away from home when I first got there.
Mm. So tell me a bit about life in New Zealand and your favourite places to explore when you were there.
I really found that country had everything you could possibly want from an outdoors and activity perspective, and the reputation that it has as being, you know, very, very good food, because, you know, there's not so much pollution. They really take care of their animals. They really take care of the way that they create crops. You know, they don't have mass crops and mono agriculture like we do in the US and to a degree in the UK. And so I remember feeling, as I travel around the country, the food was so fresh. The people were so warm and welcoming. Nature itself was so diverse. And within a given day, you could be on a brilliant beach and looking at catching some waves, and then hiking up through you know, rainforests essentially, and then into ice glaciers. And just, it really is such a diverse country. It's very, very high on any bucket list that I recommend to people.
Yeah, it's high on mine. And your dad is Scottish and your mum is Colombian, is that right?
That's right, yeah.
So we've talked a little bit about your life in Scotland, but mm-hmm. how about Colombia? Is that a destination that you've traveled around?
To be honest, it isn't, and it's one of the things that's on my list of countries I really have to do properly, because so much has changed in Colombia. It's such a vibrant,
it's a destination that's become a real travel trend, really.
Oh, it's amazing.
beautiful destination era, hasn't it?
It really is. It's such a brilliant country. The people there are so warm and welcoming. And I feel very lucky that, you know, having a Colombian mum and then a Scottish father, I got to see, you know, two very different cultures, and certainly on the Latin and South American side, you know, feeling the warmth and the passion and the energy and all of that kind of, you know, fiery spirit that Latins are so well known for, yeah. is what I'm hearing about Colombia. And it's incredibly beautiful, lots of nature, you know, also brilliant experiences from a city perspective in terms of Bogota and Medellin and places like that, which are becoming more and more on the travel path. And especially as people start to look at the concept of sustainable travel, and certainly it's something that I'm very, very passionate about, the work that I do with the World Wildlife Foundation and what we try to push through beautiful destinations, is this idea that, yes, travel is a force for good when it's done in a sustainable and scalable way that respects local people, respects their culture, respects the environment, and then respects the actual process of traveling. So that is something that I think Colombia and actually many countries in South America are now looking to leverage as a core part of their tourism asset.
Yes, you're a big advocate of sustainable tourism, and one of the fundamental pillars of becoming a sustainable traveler is to visit destinations that truly embrace sustainable ecological tourism. So aside from Colombia, maybe more globally focused, what are some other examples of places that people can pick, knowing that they can be confident that they are picking a place that has really got the sustainability at its heart?
Certainly some of the leaders from a destination standpoint, places like Panama, which are incredibly strong on nature, and you land in Panama City and in such a short time you can be out into some of the wildest and most beautiful nature anywhere in the region. Places like Rwanda, who have also really positioned themselves as a sustainable tourism destination. I mean, I think it's now...
They've done an amazing job, haven't they?
They really have. And it comes from the very, very top from a policy standpoint, because I think it's 15 years now since they banned plastic bags in the country. And then I know that it was...
So ahead of their time.
Right? I mean, I know it was planned for this year, which may or may not have been impacted by coronavirus, but I know that it was planned for this year to stop all single-use plastics in the country. And so when you have that happening at a policy level, it then translates down to what the tourism experience is, and then that, I think, is very positive.
And the wildlife tourism also such a key factor there.
Absolutely. And I think you can look at those models where, again, they work hand-in-hand with organisations like WWF and many others, where the local people are taught the value of the ecosystem that they live within. So the importance of animals, the importance of the natural environment, they're then taught to love and respect those and actually see those assets as a way to generate incomes. And so as they go through their economic development, they are thinking about how can we protect these natural assets? Because we as a society can make more money from sustainable tourism than we would from, say, poaching or burning down the rainforest or the jungles that we have, or harvesting these systems for rubber or other natural resources, which had been the traditional way that some of these communities were making money. And then from our side, I think from the traveling side, is then looking at countries and realizing that the reason why economists call travel the ATM of the world is because the moment that you land in a new country, you are putting money straight into the ecosystem. And so if you think about manufacturing or, you know, building a factory, for example, when you set up something like that in a new country, it's many months, if not many years, before the economic benefit is felt by the people in that region. Whereas the moment you get off a plane and you take a taxi to wherever you're going, or you buy a meal, or you buy a coffee, or you tip a hospitality or service professional, that is instantly giving value to the economy. And that's only coming because of travel and tourism.
Which kind of feels particularly pertinent now, given the number of people that work in tourism and hospitality worldwide and the number of people there who have obviously been directly impacted right now. It's quite kind of painful to realise
it really is. I mean, I'm very fortunate to be a member of the World Travel and Tourism Council, which is a collection of private and public sector CEOs within travel, who are looking at the state of the industry and trying to find ways to help kickstart the industry. And I think if we look at the data in the run-up to Corona, the industry had seen, I think it was 8 to 10 years of consecutive growth. Last year, 1.2 billion people took an international trip. One in 10 jobs was in the travel and tourism industry, and actually one in five jobs, newly created jobs, was in travel. So the industry was employing more people. It was growing, as you were seeing, an increase in the middle class around the world, who were then becoming more exposed to travel options. We were seeing an economy around travel that was growing, adding value to people's lives and also putting money into economies. And so really the impact, I think, although people, it's most keenly felt by people on a personal level, because I can't do that summer holiday with my family. Really the impact is on such a macro level that it's far more challenging to the world, in my opinion, on that side of things.
Mm. And I'm sure we'll come on to more about that later in the podcast, but let's pause there now and move on to chapter two, which is the first place that you fell in love with.
The first place I fell in love with. We've touched on New Zealand, and I know it's a little bit repetitive to say that place, but I'd say I'll tell you a little bit more context as to why. It was the journey that I went through leaving the UK after I finished school. It actually took me through Asia as I was going to New Zealand. So the way that I booked my flight, I flew from London to Singapore, and I had 3 days in Singapore. And even though Singapore is in many ways very Western, and actually in many ways very British, it was such a different and eye-opening experience for me to see a completely different culture. And that was the moment when I realized that I was absolutely in love with the industry and the concept of traveling and meeting people. So Singapore and New Zealand for me have these very special places in my mind as the first places that really opened my eyes to the power of travel. And they are two completely different tourism experiences. Singapore is such a fantastic business place to be. There's so much going on from an economic and finance perspective, that the experience that you have in there is very much a city experience. It's very much a launch pad then into other parts of Asia, whereas New Zealand is, just by its geographical positioning, very isolated and its own unique culture in itself. So I'd say that those are the two places that I fell in love with, like really fell in love with first. When I was younger, I did small European holidays with my family, which was of course amazing. I think many of the British audience that will be listening to this will remember trips to Portugal or to France or to Germany or Spain. And really, since I've moved to the US, one of the biggest insights for me from a traveling perspective was just how lucky we have been in the UK to be able to be in so many different countries within short-haul flights, because many Americans, they vacation, they holiday domestically. 60% of Americans don't have a passport. And actually, given how amazing the US is as a tourism destination, each state is in many ways its own unique country and its own unique experience, that for many of them, there isn't really that much of an incentive to go out and travel. But when you are in the UK or in Europe, you can experience very different cultures within a few hours of each other on a flight. So I know there's a little bit around the way, but does that help answer the question?
Yeah. And you talk about how that trip through Singapore and New Zealand really ignited your passion for travel. That kind of leads me on really nicely to the formation of beautiful destinations. I suppose on a macro level, first of all, for anyone who isn't part of your 25 million strong community online, can you tell them a little bit about what beautiful destinations is and how it came about?
Yes, of course. So there are two very distinct parts to what is now one of the largest tourism communities in the world online. And one part is the business, which I'll talk through. But the part that most people know us for is this community, this audience that you mentioned. And it started on Instagram, and it started with a very, very simple belief that people around the world would connect and communicate with each other through the lens of beautiful imagery. So when Beautiful Destinations started in the very, very beginning, Instagram only allowed you to post square photos. There were a handful of filters. There was none of the rich experience that you see in the app now in terms of commerce and videos and direct messaging. And the early days, it was really just connecting with people around the world who were creatives showing what their perspective of life was. So it was reaching out to people and saying, hey, you're a teacher in Melbourne. that spends their weekends going and taking photos of what you see, and their beautiful, inspirational pieces of content. Could we share that on Beautiful Destinations, tell the world about your part of the world, and then do that with multiple people and build a community? And so in the very early days, really Beautiful Destinations was the only player in travel, because most of the major travel brands, both on the media and publishing side and the actual brand side, so the online travel agents or the airlines or the hotels, were just not using Instagram. In fact, they weren't using social media. So this was back in very early 2012. And so being the first guys there and having the advantage of a very clear mission statement, which was just to show the beauty of the world, we were able to build this community, which got bigger and bigger and bigger. And the first, you know, 1,000 followers became millions and so on. And in that process, the business emerged. And so the business side of what Beautiful Destinations does is as a strategy and creative agency for the travel and tourism industry, which means we sit down with ministers of tourism, the CEOs of tourism boards and other leading travel brands, and we help them to translate whatever their story is onto digital and social channels and then get it in front of travelers.
Mm, that's really interesting. I'm sure that you're asked this all the time, but I'm going to ask it, and I'm hoping for a really specific answer to help all of our Instagram lovers out there. Mm-hmm. What, in your opinion, makes a beautiful destination photo?
The starting point is to have clarity on exactly what you want your brand to look and feel like. So again, if you look at the details of the Beautiful Destinations content, we never post photographs, you know, selfies. We really very, very rarely have people in our content. And when we do have people, it is very much to provide the context of how beautiful or the scale of the place that they're in. It's very much, you know, for example, standing at the bottom of a waterfall to show that it is hundreds of feet high, or, you know, jumping into a sea to show the context of how electric blue the water is. And those are silly examples, but hopefully you understand the context.
Yeah.
So that would be the first thing. I think then the second thing is really to try and find a unique perspective to the things that you see in front of you every day. And what we found very, very early on was that the major tourist attractions, way, way before social media, have been captured, you know, millions and millions and millions of times. And so one of the areas that we push, and certainly we found that more as more and more young travelers are coming out into the market, they're looking for experiences and content that is different to what they may have seen in the pages of more traditional magazine, books, or even on TV. And so if we're going to go to the Eiffel Tower, then we are going to find a unique vantage point, which is not the place that all tourists will go to capture a piece of content. And that is a rule across all the ways we look at different content creation, is what is a unique perspective or a unique angle for capturing and telling the story of the place that we're in, even if it has been done millions and millions of times in the past. So I would really encourage people to go a little bit deeper when they look at trying to track to capture travel content and think about that. And I mean, there's also very obvious stuff around light. You know, any good photographer will tell you that the golden hour around sunrise, so the hour, you know, just before and just after sunrise, and then the same time period around sunset, is when you'll get the best light. And I think with those three things, you should be you should be in good shape.
Do you know what the most popular photo on the Beautiful Destinations feed is currently?
Absolutely. So we see certain parts of the world have been incredibly popular. So, for example, photographs of the cherry blossoms in Japan are up there as some of the most popular content we've ever shared. Photographs of the Greek islands. I mean, we've all seen those beautiful photographs of Santorini and Mykonos. And increasingly, what we're looking to try and do is to take the insights that come from content in those locations and find and then showcase more of the emerging destinations. So if we learn, for example, that there are particular blues in the way that Greek content has shot that has worked, and we then try and apply that to other parts in Greece, other less well-known islands, we feel pretty confident that that content will perform well. And then ultimately the goal for us is actually not about the engagement, it's to raise the profile of some of these destinations. So hopefully if you get deeper into the Beautiful Destinations content, or if any of your listeners don't follow us and do start following us now, our hope is that we would be presenting to them destinations that maybe hadn't been on their radar, that are absolutely worthwhile going. And that has the twofold benefit of exciting and
preventing over tourism as well.
Exactly. So preventing over tourism and developing regional dispersion, which is critically important as we think about the growth of sustainable tourism. But then second, actually giving meaningful value to the consumer, because increasingly what we're learning, certainly about a millennial travel generation and Gen Z, is that they don't want to do the same things that their parents did. They don't want to go to the same tourist destinations that have been on the map. Very much what drives their travel choices is a unique destination, a place where they can get content and have an experience that is unique to themselves, and then they can share in a way that that their own audiences and friends will appreciate. And so, you know, we've all seen the same photos from the same places many, many times. And so if we can raise the profile of other destinations that are just as beautiful, would benefit from tourism, and would give a unique experience to a traveler, then that's a win for everybody.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Today's episode is supported by Airbnb, and what a great partnership. If you're a longtime listener of the Travel Diaries, you probably know that we love to put our home on Airbnb when we're traveling. Like last autumn when we took the family to Puglia, we put our house on Airbnb when otherwise it would just be sitting empty, which meant that we earned some extra money that went towards our flights and maybe some souvenirs too. Hosting on Airbnb for us is also a family affair. My mum is an Airbnb superhost. She regularly has guests stay in her little chalet in her garden. And my dad, who lives in France, has his home on Airbnb so that when he comes back to visit, he is earning some extra money while he's away. My dad is 80 and he only started hosting on Airbnb a couple of years ago. So hopefully that shows you how straightforward the whole experience is. He found it so easy to list his house that I think he's got all his pals signing up now too. And it really is straightforward. You can choose whether you want to rent out your entire home or just some rooms. Alex and I, for example, list our spare bedroom, and that works really well for us. So if you have a trip coming up and you want to earn some extra money while you're away, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.co.uk/host. That's airbnb.co.uk/host. Thank you to Airbnb.
So chapter 3 then is the place where you learned the most about yourself. Where would that be?
I would say New York, because I felt as though the next stage of my entrepreneurial journey was to come and get into the big leagues in the US. So much of the opportunity was in New York. And when I got here, I felt as though in many ways it was New York was the dream that I'd always hoped it would be. And I think for many listeners, they'll relate to that idea of moving to New York and the appeal and the allure of this big city that's such a thriving part of the US economy. But also I found in reverse that it was lonely and it was very tough. I felt that I learned so much about myself coming to this city and learning how to grow my business, but also how to build a new circle of friends, how to adapt to a very fast-paced, you know, very aggressive and sort of forward-leaning and forward-thinking culture. And that was certainly very different to what I'd experienced in London. And ultimately, it's been an amazing experience.
What you said is interesting also about moving to New York and that feeling of loneliness, because I think that's a part of travel, whether it's long-term, i.e. moving somewhere, or just a short-term, maybe solo travel trip that people don't talk about. They share how happy and exciting their times are, but actually that's an important part of travel.
Absolutely. I really feel as though the best lessons that I've learned in my life have come through travel. And I think and I hope I'm known for talking about the power of travel as a force for good and its ability to break down barriers and its ability to show individuals how connected they can be with other people, regardless of the color of their skin or where they come from or their faith. Of course, there have been positive experiences and negative experiences, but ultimately, I really feel as though if you have the chance to travel, you should get out and do it because it teaches you so much.
Mm. So that leads me on to chapter 4, places to get out to travel. What would you say is your all-time favorite destination? I know it's a really hard one for someone who's so well traveled. It's so hard for everyone, I know, but if you had to just pick one to share with the listeners today, what would you pick?
I would say Japan. And I would say because personally for me, it was one of the biggest voyages of self-discovery because I went to the country and for the first time ever, and this may be a British outlook, but for the first time ever, found a culture that was completely alien to me. Mm. Didn't speak the same language, didn't eat the same food. We're definitely not going to make the effort to try and speak English. And I think what I have found is I have friends from all over the world who are always so accommodating because they make the effort to learn English and speak English with me. But I definitely have not made the same, and I think many listeners will relate to this, have not made the same investments in learning French or Spanish or German or Asian languages or Arabic. And in many ways, I've found that in my travel experiences, English has been that common language. But when I got to Japan, certainly people spoke English, but they really didn't change. I needed to change and to grow to understand and be a part of their culture. And I absolutely loved it. So I love the tradition and the ceremony of the culture out there. I obviously love the work ethic, although there are certainly negative sides to that and the place is known for some of the challenges of working too hard, but certainly industry and the way that they've impacted culture on so many different levels, I find very inspiring. And although I haven't explored it anywhere near the amount that I would like to, I've had amazing experiences, transformational experiences for me when I've gone to Japan.
Which parts of Japan in particular have you traveled to and stand out for you?
So everyone when they go to Japan say, I went to Tokyo, I did a few days there and then I bounced around. I actually went really deep into Tokyo and spent a lot of time there. I think I've been to Tokyo maybe 4 or 5 times over the years and had very, very different experiences in the city, and I find that when you immerse yourself in a city like that, there's just so much to explore and there's so much to find. And actually, one of the things that I've
found, the biggest city in the world.
Yeah, well, I mean, what I found so powerful about going to a place like that and doing it in combination with social media is that I was able to connect with people who I'd never met before. We connected through Instagram. They created content and they were part of a particular community which was thriving on social channels. And that was their way of expressing their creative outlet and how they saw the world and what they cared about. And then having completely unique experiences with individuals that I never would have found had I not used social media. And often I will go into Instagram and I will look at the geotags of places that I am interested in visiting, and I'll see what the place looks like and I'll see who are the people in those communities and what are they doing. And that I found is such a brilliant way to travel, that is a completely new way of traveling that has given me so much value.
So that's really interesting. So you use Instagram tagged destinations to get your own travel inspiration when you're in a particular location?
Not only inspiration, but also connection with people. So what I've found is that by looking at the hashtags of places I'm going, you can absolutely go down a rabbit hole if you're a foodie and traveling to a destination of finding food accounts that relate to that place that you're going to. And not only can you see beautiful content and then discover new places or restaurants or bars you might want to visit, you can then see people in those communities that are vibrant in those communities.
That's something I'll definitely think more about the next time that I travel.
Good.
COVID aside, what were you predicting as 2020's next big travel destination?
That is a great question. We were certainly seeing, I think, two major trends. One was the American market discovering some of the slightly off the beaten path travel destinations within Greece, Italy, Portugal, Spain, France, because the US market has been coming to Europe for a very, very long time. And a lot of the insight that we've learned from the industry is that the American traveler tended to go to the places that were you know, the big ticket, big bucket item. So go to Paris, cross off the Eiffel Tower, go to Italy, cross off Milan and so on. What we were seeing, and I think it's largely through the emergence of social media and this philosophy that I explained of, you know, uncovering new places within places that you think you know, or uncovering places that are just off the beaten path and showing how beautiful they are. We were certainly seeing a movement from the American traveler. I mean, our audience is, our largest audience is American, into some of the more undiscovered gems in these places. And so we were seeing people going to the Greek islands, but actually going away from the traditional Santorini's and Mykonos's, which they've discovered over many years, and exploring, you know, a little bit further out into other Greek islands, which I think is incredibly important. I think it's actually a really positive trend. I think on a global macro level, definitely seeing growth in Asia. You know, seeing some of these destinations that have so much potential and so many, you know, raw materials for brilliant travel experiences like Vietnam and Laos and Cambodia. And these places starting to emerge in two fronts. One is from a brand awareness standpoint, and so more people being aware of them as places they should go and visit. But the second is then actually dramatically increasing their product. So the hotel product that was available, you're seeing many more of these boutique operators actually really stepping up the quality of the hotel that they provide, or the tour experience that they provide. So we were seeing that as a trend, and unfortunately so challenging with Corona, because everyone was locked down and the momentum was taken out of everybody's sales. But those are some things that we were seeing before, you know, before Corona hit.
And going back to uncovering new places and gems, chapter 5 is your hidden gem. What would you say is a place that you've uncovered that maybe other people might not know so well?
I think this will go back to 2016, which was the very first time that I went to the Philippines. Again, if anybody follows me on social media, they know how much I love the Philippines and the amazing experiences that I've had there. It's a little bit of a long haul for your British audience, but I mean, to be honest, it's a bit of a long haul for most audiences if you're not in Asia. But it is a brilliant, brilliant country. The people are so warm and so welcoming. Really, I find that as a nation that is so geared towards hospitality and being so accommodating, they really do provide a brilliant travel experience. And going through the islands in the Philippines and Palawan and El Nido and you know, the kind of places and experiences you can have around that in nature, I've really enjoyed and would say is one of my hidden gems. I would highly recommend it as a destination for people when Corona passes, largely because I think there's over 7,000 islands that make up the Philippines,
and it's vast.
You know, it's just huge, but also more and more people are now uncovering places that they can go within that. So if you want to go to a busy, vibrant beach where you have party options, you have restaurant and dining options, you have a nightlife, it has that in Boracay. If you want something that is a little bit more chilled, a little bit more relaxed, a little bit more coming back to nature, it also has that in El Nido and Palawan and beyond. And so I think from a beach destination and that really kind of getting away from it all, I highly recommend the Philippines.
Great tip. And as you say, 7,000 islands, how much have you traveled within those? Have you found hidden gems within your hidden gem?
Yeah, no, great question. So I have really done the main part of my traveling in the Philippines around Palawan, around El Nido, around Cebu. I haven't gone, but I mean, there's a number of places that I really want to go. So I've heard amazing things about Siargao, which is supposedly where the surf community is, where you have beautiful islands, beautiful beaches down there, and obviously beautiful surf breaks. But I haven't been there personally. I just sharing anecdotes that I've heard.
So in contrast then, chapter 6 is your worst travel experience.
Yes. So this really comes from a lack of understanding and planning on my part, and less so about the place that I was traveling to. So I was traveling through East Africa and hadn't got my yellow fever vaccine, or rather I'd had it, but didn't have the paperwork to show that I had had it. And the region was, you know, discovering Ebola, and I'm on heightened alert because of what was happening in Ebola. And so I landed and did not have my yellow fever it's a little booklet that shows that you've had it. So in this airport, what ended up happening was I wasn't allowed into the country, and I'd literally just flown for about 35 hours to get there. I had a meeting that I needed to do. And the long story short was I could either get back on that 35 hour journey back to New York, or just get the injection there in the airport. And I think in hindsight, probably it wasn't the smartest thing I ever did, but I just got the injection and it was administered literally there in the airport behind a curtain, and the syringes were thrown into a bucket and that was it, move on. So I'd say the two learnings there were, number one, my own planning was a little bit lacking, but then in reverse, the experience itself was not good from a tourism standpoint, because all of the guests that were landing actually saw this happening to me. So they saw me getting the injection. So their first experience of arriving into this airport was somewhat harrowing. So I think the big lesson there was just to make sure that I am aware, and I think travelers are aware of local customs, which I think is going to be even more important as you start traveling post-corona.
Yeah. And are you going to be getting on a plane ASAP? What's your feeling about kind of overseas travel?
Yes. So I think...
I feel quite conflicted about it still.
I was about to say, I do feel conflicted. And I feel in many ways, I know the economic reasons. I know why it's critically important. I know we have to get our industry kickstarted again and moving. Equally, I think that nobody knows what is happening with Corona, and the media in many ways is doing the best it can to report on what's happening. In many ways it's fanning the flames, and in many ways it's just very confusing on all sides, and different countries are reporting things in different ways. So personally, I am hoping to do a trip back home to the UK towards the end of July. And if the quarantine is still in place and I do 2 weeks, at my place in London, no problem at all. I'll happily do that. I think that's very sensible to make sure that we keep everything safe. If by then it's lifted and the government feels like it's safe to do that, then of course that's good too. But I'm hoping end of July, get back to the UK. But, I think things are changing so regularly that, I haven't actually booked that flight yet, and I don't think I'll book it until a little bit closer to the potential date.
So I can't believe we're on to the final chapter of your travel diaries, Jeremy. That is chapter 7, which is, what is at the top of your travel bucket list?
You know, I'm asked that so often and it changes so often, because what I've realized, it's funny, it's like learning. You realize as you get deeper into it how little you know. And I feel with travel, even though I may be perceived as very, very well traveled, and I know that I am, I'm not anywhere near as traveled as I'd like to be. And I think really every single week I'm discovering new places and experiences that I had no idea about. I have had amazing experiences in Asia, amazing experiences in the Middle East, obviously living in New Zealand, Australasia. I've had amazing experiences there. But the one part of the world I haven't spent enough time in yet, I think, is the Nordics. Norway is an amazing country that I have never been to. I spent a fair bit of time going in and out of Stockholm for business, but not really traveling around Sweden. I'd say the Nordics, and in particular Norway, maybe the Lofoten Islands, Fjordland. Yeah. So some of those places I've just never been and I've always wanted to go.
Well, thank you so much, Jeremy. That was such an amazing insight into all kinds of aspects of the travel industry and incredible travel diaries. So thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That was Jeremy Jauncey, a real travel trailblazer. You can follow him on Instagram at Jeremy Jauncey, and of course, follow Beautiful Destinations too. If you've enjoyed this episode today, then don't forget to subscribe, and leaving a review or rating really helps others to discover the podcast. And to find out who's on next week's show, come and find me on Instagram. I'm at Holly Rubenstein. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening in the meantime, and I will see you again next week. Today's episode is supported by Airbnb, and what a great partnership. If you're a longtime listener of the Travel Diaries, you probably know that we love to put our home on Airbnb when we're traveling. Like
last autumn when we took the family to Puglia. We put our house on Airbnb when otherwise it would just be sitting empty, which meant that we earned some extra money that went towards our flights and maybe some souvenirs too. Hosting on Airbnb for us is also a family affair. My mum is an Airbnb superhost. She regularly has guests stay in her little chalet in her garden. And my dad, who lives in France, has his home on Airbnb so that when he comes back to visit, he is earning some extra money while he's away. My dad is 80 and he only started hosting on Airbnb a couple of years ago. So hopefully that shows you how straightforward the whole experience is. He found it so easy to list his house that I think he's got all his pals signing up now too. And it really is straightforward. You can choose whether you want to rent out your entire home or just some rooms. Alex and I, for example, list our spare bedroom and that works really well for us. So if you have a trip coming up and you want to earn some extra money while you're away, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.co.uk/host. That's airbnb.co.uk/host. Thank you to Airbnb.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.